From courtside of the virtual hardwood, it's the NLSC podcast, episode number 363. Andrew with you once again. I am Andrew in the forum and Andrew NLSC on Twitter. My co-host and fellow NLSC team member is Derek. You know him as DP3 in the forum and DP384 on Twitter.
I'm happy to be here again. And I actually wanted to start this podcast off talking about NBA Live 2006 because you recently picked it up again and you played a game and you were telling me a little bit about the experience. I find that fascinating because obviously NBA Live 06 was the first game that, you know, the first live game that hit Xbox 360 and, you know, that series of systems. So I wanted to see what you thought.
Yeah, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to have to write an article following up on my retrospective that I did for the 25th anniversary, because this is the 360 version. And as you know, and as regular listeners to the show probably know as well, and if you're familiar with my articles as well, I do love NBA Live 06 PC, consider it one of the last great releases. Now, the 360 launch was quite rough. It didn't get a lot of love at the time, and certainly has a lot of issues. But, you know, yeah, I was playing it last night, and I played a full game, and I messaged you afterwards and said I just had an incredibly, I forget my words, but I think it was incredibly or ridiculously fun game of Live 06 on 360, because it truly was. I was playing as the Supersonics versus the Magic, and had a great comeback, come from behind victory. I blew an early lead. I was up about 37-14 in the first quarter. Then they caught up as I subbed a couple of players out, and the momentum went and just launched this really fun comeback. And it was just playing from behind pretty much the whole game, and then took over in the waning minutes of the fourth quarter, and just a very satisfying comeback victory against the AI. And it left me thinking, you know, while 06 did in so much as not having Dynasty Mode and All-Star Weekend, and it left out Freestyle Superstars, but the gameplay, not perfect, it has its issues, and I do stand by some of my criticisms, but yeah, it's the most fun I think I've ever had with that game. It was quite fun to revisit.
It's also much better than Live 07.
That too, in my opinion. It definitely is, yeah.
From a gameplay perspective, and from graphically as well, but you know, when you were telling me about it, and you actually gave me even more information now than when we talked before, you know, before the show, so that's great. Because I didn't realize you were using the Supersonics. But the thing with NBA Live 06 is it had that base gameplay that people still really liked, like from Live 06 and Live 05 on PS2. So it still had that strong gameplay base. Like you said, it didn't have like the authenticity portion, the Freestyle Superstar portion and whatnot, but like that core gameplay is still there. And remember when I picked it up, I think it was like 2 years ago or whatnot, I re-picked it up and I put it on and I made a YouTube video of it. I was using the 76ers with Iverson, Iguodala, Weber and whatnot. And I remember telling you, and I was remember talking about this in the comments a little bit on that video, that it impressed me. Like, it wasn't as bad as I had forgot, as I thought it was, you know, looking back on it.
Yeah, and no, I mean, like, I went back and played it when I did my retrospective last year, and, you know, I could see some of the benefits of it, but I did notice the problems with the CPU does feel a bit quicker. There are some clunky moments. The lack of Freestyle Superstars does leave you feeling a bit underpowered when you go from the PC version. But I said in my retrospective that it was considerably inferior. And although I might put the last-gen version, the PC, PS2, etc. version, above it because of Freestyle Superstars and some of its other mechanics, I don't think it was as vastly inferior as my previous time with the game led me to believe, because it did feel very fun. I enjoyed it for what it was, and this week we are going to be talking about going back and changing our mind about games and the factors that change our minds when we go back and look at them with fresh eyes. But yeah, it held up better than I thought, and as you say, graphically, for the time, it's actually quite impressive.
The graphics are great on a lot of the faces and the bodies and the sweat and all of that stuff. The lighting in the arenas, I think it's, I love the graphics on it. Obviously the graphics overall are more appealing than NBA 2K6. It seems like they focused more on realism on that part for NBA Live than what NBA 2K6 did with their faces and body models and everything. You know, the other thing too with Live that really hurt that game, in my opinion, and hurts it now as far as like wanting to show it off and everything, is the lack of camera view options. You know, they sorely need a true broadcast camera, or like a press box, like the ones that basically options that you've had in other NBA Live games that allowed you to give that nice TV style view. But they only put like 3 camera views in the game, and they're absolutely terrible.
They don't pan quick enough either. When you're on a fast break or trying to defend a fast break, the action, the camera doesn't quite keep up with the action, and that's a problem.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And you know, another thing too, people might have noticed too, that hurts the presentation, is it almost seems like there's a frame rate issue with the game, where it's not completely smooth.
Yeah.
When you're playing it, the entire time, it feels like it's not running at 60 frames per second. It's at 50.
Until 08. That's when they introduced 60 frames per second was NBA Live 08. So that's definitely
right,
a problem.
That makes sense. Right. But NBA 2K6, I went back and played that, and that's much smoother.
Yeah.
Far as like, it doesn't have that noticeable frame drop that's consistently throughout the game. But graphically, and you know, I said this to you too when we were talking about this briefly, you know, graphically it's great, but also like there's certain underrated aspects of it. The dribbling is tight, like the PS2 version, but the post game is really fun. In my opinion, I like it, the how it works to spin baseline, to spin in. You can do those nice, like, you know, the David Robinson spin moves that he used to do in the post, and then finish it on the opposite side of the hoop.
The drop step,
like,
and everything, yeah.
Those,
yeah.
And it feels good, the drop step, the baby hook, which looks like it's pulled directly from the PS2 version, etc. Like, the post game's fun.
It is. I've actually noticed, you know, we were talking about jump shots last week. Go back to episode 362. You can check it out. Deep dive into the shooting mechanics over the throughout the history of games and what we think about the different mechanics. Actually, making jump shots in 06 on 360 does feel a bit better. And admittedly, I haven't played with the sliders, whereas I have on PC, and maybe I've set the sliders too low with the ones that I've traditionally used on PC. It's been a while since I have done any tweaks. That being said, it felt like when I was using the Sonics. I had a couple of times with Ray Allen starting out with the drive and do a step back or a quick crossover and just pull up in the mid-range and knock it down. It actually felt more reliable than I remembered. And overall, yes, I don't know if I would put it on par, as I said, with the PC version, because it was more polished from gameplay standpoint and had the innovation of, again, Freestyle Superstars. But it's actually quite solid. I think I'm going to have to write another article, as I said, and put that out there and amend that. I mean, I'll play a few more games and just see if it was a one-off, and maybe my older opinions will hold up. And that's why you do need to, you know, whenever you're reviewing a game, whether it's new or old, you do need to give it a fair chance and just to see what's an anomaly and what's consistent. But yeah, it's actually more solid than I remember, and it's a game that I wouldn't mind dusting off every so often. I mean, the problem is, of course, it has no dynasty mode, it has a season mode. But it really goes to show the importance of having a mode that keeps you hooked. Because even though the gameplay was pretty solid, you can get used to it, you can enjoy it. Back then, to go backwards from having this 25-year dynasty with scouting and the draft and with generated rookies and free agency and trades, to go backwards from that, even with solid gameplay, it just wasn't enough.
Yeah, and I agree. And I remember I told you this. One of the things, the reason why we moved on from the NBA Live series, not only because NBA Live 07 afterwards was just, the shooting on NBA Live 07 too also doesn't even get close to comparing to NBA Live 06. Like, just NBA Live 07 is just not as good of a game in any way, in my opinion. Overall,
it's got more modes, that's about it.
That's about it. Definitely not from any gameplay or graphical perspective. But, you know, I told you this. I said the reason why we moved on from the Live series was because they took out the ability to have multi-team use in season mode.
2004,
so
yeah.
My brothers and I couldn't, yeah, my brothers and I, we weren't able to choose, you know, do a fantasy draft, choose teams, you know, draft teams and whatnot, and play against each other in a season, which is what we were always doing. So that's really what made us move on, is like you said, you know, the importance of depth. It's that lack of depth. And I did want to point out another thing about NBA Live 06 that I really enjoyed when I was making that video a couple of years ago, was the fast breaks are really fun.
Yes.
And the fast breaks really are really fun. And like you, if you like use a team like the Heat and you're on the fast break and you have Jason Williams and you throw a pass to Dwayne Wade and you take off and do one of those one-handed dunks, it looks and feels beautiful.
It's very satisfying, isn't it?
It's super satisfying. I mean, the sound effects suck. They really botch that. Yeah. Like the you can go up like with the Heat Shaq and throw down a monster two-handed jam in that game, and there's like clack. No sound.
It's just like clack.
Yeah, like it's weird. Yeah, it's like a it doesn't even sound like a rim or anything.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something that 2K got a lot better. They were a lot better with. But yeah, there's this feeling when you play some of those old live games where, like, when you go up for a dunk and you're gliding in for like a one-handed dunk or one of those two-handed dunks where they have the ball a little bit behind their head. When you do that, it just looks awesome.
As much as I loved Live 2005, and it is a solid game, one of the best in the series, a personal favorite too, they definitely didn't get it right with the fast breaks. I'm glad you brought that up. One of the problems, or two of the problems in 2005, was there was a catch-up bug. It was way too easy to catch up and for a chase-down block. And I think that was like the year after Tayshaun Prince had his huge chase-down block in the playoffs. So they wanted to implement that, but it was too easy to do, and the defense caught up way too easily. So that was one problem with 2005. The other one was on the break, they didn't cut to the rim properly. And 06 on PC fixed that in PS2, and that did carry over to the 360 version as well. And it's like you say, if you time that pass properly, you just get this beautiful fast break, this really satisfying finish at the rim. And you couldn't do that in the year before, in 2005, because the players would just kind of stop running at the three-point line or kind of in the mid-range or fade to the three-point line, which I guess is kind of what they do these days on the fast break. So again, predicting the future there. But it is very satisfying because the CPU players, your teammates, actually have that awareness, that logic to run to the rim, to cut at just the right time. So if you do that, make that pass or throw the lob, it's just such a great feeling.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that they just could have done so much more with that title and just kept Live just in the driver's seat. I mean, if you think about it, they get a couple more camera views. Maybe they pay tribute to some of the old Live games and put like a isometric view in there that really works and looks good. You know, that's a little bit further away, kind of like the crowd cam that's in NBA 2K8. But get like a good couple good broadcast cameras and camera views in there. You know, allow multi-team use in season mode. Keep the all-decade. Why not keep all the all-decade teams in there? You have the rights to them. You know, keep the all-decade teams in there.
Retro jerseys. And little things, yeah.
Yeah, little things, like stuff like that. And I think that NBA Live could have kept momentum.
It definitely could have. I mean, there's the roughness there, but not as much as I remembered from the last time I played it. So I was quite taken with it. And I'll give it a bit more of a go because it certainly did draw me in. I'm also kind of oddly nostalgic. You know, we brought up last week that feeling that nostalgic for 2005 and a lot of people feeling that. It's kind of got me in the mood to look at that era again. So that's what I actually pulled out 06 to check something for an upcoming article. I wanted to make sure that something that I said came in 07 wasn't actually in 06. But then in doing so, I ended up playing the game and really enjoying it. And yeah, it's just a shame they didn't continue with that depth and bring in those... Bring in the legends, as you say, the all-decade teams, and keep the retro jerseys, just that extra content. I will say one thing. When you go back to an old game, sometimes it takes a while to adjust to the controls, and I feel we've touched on this before, because it's one of those evergreen issues when you retro game. And one of the problems with with controls in old games is they move around sometimes what is icon passing and what is alley-oop, because they're both usually shoulder buttons. So inevitably, when I go back to an old game, I'm going to throw an alley-oop from half court.
Yeah, we've all been there before. The half-court alley-oops, the like going into the post but forgetting the post-up button.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, no, I...
Because the post-up button changes.
A couple of times, throwing the full-court alley-oop to somebody at half-court and just watching them launch a underhanded fling from half-court and watch it hit the rim. Like, oh, that's a pretty good effort, actually, to just grab it in midair and fling it up one-handed at the hoop from half-court and actually hit the rim. I mean, that's you know, almost deserve half a point for doing that. But it is funny when you go back and play those old games and do that. But no, we both love revisiting those old games. And the topic this week is those games that we change our mind on. Because you do sometimes, and there's a lot of reasons why, and I do have a forthcoming Monday Tip-Off article about this, and we'll probably touch on some familiar themes throughout this episode, but you and I, we do both love revisiting these games, and we have changed our mind on some, and 06 is a good way to get into that, because it's one that I've changed my mind on very recently, and now feel like looking into a little bit more and seeing if I really did judge it a little bit harshly before. But yeah, what's the first game that comes to mind for you when I bring up the idea of games you've changed your mind on that you previously didn't really like that much?
Actually, a relatively recent game, NBA 2K16, and I think the biggest reason with NBA 2K16 is I can't even tell you how much I was looking forward to NBA 2K17, because I felt that NBA 2K16, excuse me, I felt like the players were kind of stuck in the mud. I felt like they overall felt heavy, that the dribbling as well felt clunky and whatnot. And one thing that I never did with NBA 2K16, because I really started getting into it with NBA 2K17, is I never messed with the sliders. And if I did, it was only a small tweak here and there. Like maybe because fatigue, players were running out of stamina too fast. So I would go in and I would adjust the fatigue or something like that. And I'm playing NBA 2, and I was like, you know what? One day I was like, you know what? I'm going to go in and I'm going to adjust the sliders. I'm going to boost up the acceleration, the speed of the players. I'm going to go in and adjust basically player movement sliders, and I'm going to turn up the game speed from, you know, 50 to something like 54 and for 55. So I went back and did that with NBA 2K16, and I'm playing it and I'm like, damn, this game feels pretty good. And I'm playing it a little bit more. I made some adjustments to some of the players that I was using and whatnot in order to free up their movement if their ball handling was too low and whatnot. And I'm playing it after the player movement tweaks, and I'm like, this game's really fun, and these players don't feel heavy anymore. And I feel like we're flying on the fast break, and that I can, you know, do a quick dribble move and get by my man, and, you know, to have a rewarding drive and a realistic drive to the hoop. And it really comes down to, you know, the game needs to be strong by default. But that's why having those options, and we've talked about this, you know, that's why having those slider options are so important, and giving people, you know, tweaking options, is because it really can change the outlook on a game and the experience.
Undoubtedly. I was just thinking back to that conversation we had about sliders and their importance, and of course, that is an evergreen point. But what didn't we figure out at the time through some informal polling on Twitter or something like along those lines that we figured out that probably 10% or less of people actually touch the sliders?
Oh, yeah. I did a poll. I'd have to dig that up. And there was a very, very small percentage that actually extensively mess with them, to be honest with you. I think the majority of gamers do not mess with sliders.
No, it should be good out of the box, and that's why people don't. I mean, in a way, it should have that optimal experience, which is hard to do for absolutely everybody, which is why you have the sliders. But when it doesn't have that proper impression for the core audience, the right first impression, I should say, that is when people get turned off. And it's not until you revisit these games and maybe use someone's mod or someone's sliders that you play it and think, oh, this is actually capable of being a better gameplay experience than I thought.
Yeah, the average gamer selects a difficulty and goes into the game. Or doesn't even select a difficulty. They just keep it on default, and then they go into a game. That is the average gamer. If you really think that, you know, the shady mics are rare. You know, me, I'm rare. You're rare. Like, we're people that are part of the NBA Live Series Center. We play these games probably even more than the average person does. We're playing also offline more than the average person does nowadays as well. You know, what the average gamer is doing is they're, you know, keeping those settings as default and running, going into a My League, or they're going into Play Now. You know, that's why I say, you know, when people say, you know, when people say things like, we'll just mess with the sliders, man. You can change, blah, blah, blah. You can just mess with the sliders. Yes, you can. But number one, that doesn't get rid of all the gameplay issues. You can make things feel a little bit better, like I did with NBA 2K16. But the core, the game needs to be strong by default in order to, you know, give that, like you said, that right impression for those who, you know, don't mess with any of the settings or don't know how to mess with the sliders and stuff like that. And you know what? A lot of people don't know how to mess with sliders appropriately either. So, I mean,
it's
if you ask...
It's not always clear. These settings...
Right, it's not always clear.
The names are the kind of point you in the right direction, but they don't always tell you that much. You don't know how much one notch or five notches is on the slider. Recent sliders in Live go by, I think, multiples of 5 or 10 rather than one as they used to. So it takes a lot of experimentation. And understandably, some people don't want to experiment. They just, they do just want to jump into the game, and that's understandable, which is why, again, it is so important to have that positive first impression. I was just thinking of time spent on the games, because now with the with PlayStation 5 launch, they've added the ability to see how many hours you spent in a game. And I had a quick look at some of my library last night, and I noticed that I spent 854 hours in NBA 2K20 on PS4, which is... I want to see my stats for 2K17 now, because that's the year that I played 500 games of Pro-Am on top of two full seasons of my career. Or one full season, one and a bit full seasons of my career. So that's got to top 1,000, I feel.
That's crazy.
It
is.
Just
a lot of...
I didn't realize it was that much. That's more time than I spent in Fallout. And I spent a lot of time in Fallout.
I do want to point out, though, I just went back and played NBA 2K20, and it's the opposite reaction. I went and played it, and it bums me out. The gameplay absolutely bums me out in comparison to NBA 2K21 next gen, and it bums me out compared to NBA 2K19, 2K16, 2K17. And it really comes down to the player movement just feels so ridiculous to me.
Hmm.
Like with the hunched over players and the weird change of direction by the players and whatnot. But then also the fact that the players, even with slider tweaks, just feel heavy. In comparison to 2K21 next gen and in comparison to games like NBA 2K19, 2K17, 2K16, 2K15 and whatnot. So yeah, I went back and tried to play some 2K20 and I was completely bummed out by it.
I mean, that's interesting because, obviously I spent a lot of time with 2K20. I was surprised I spent more time with 2K20 than 2K19 because 2K19, I did play two full seasons of my career. Plus a bit of a third, not to mention all of the online games as well. So I suppose that's where it adds up. But I haven't touched 2K20 in a while. I might have to do that myself. But to that point, not all games... I mean, we're talking about changing our opinion on games for the better, but we should also touch on the fact that sometimes you go back to games and that, you know, the nostalgia blinds you to in your memory how good it was. You remember it being much better because of the nostalgia, or sometimes your opinions don't change. It's just as you remembered, for better or worse, or even a recent game that you thought that you had criticisms of, you go back and it was even worse still. So it's not always a positive experience when you go back and play these games, and you do notice it both ways.
So it's funny actually. I look at NBA 2K19 almost like the Mario Brothers 2 of NBA 2K games, where it's a game that's kind of unique in the series. I find NBA 2K19, like Mario 2 was so different than like the original Mario and Mario 3 and whatnot. Like NBA 2K19 they focused so much on defense in that game, and just the overall feel of the game when you're playing it just stands out as kind of like its own thing. Like it's a very unique NBA 2K in my opinion, and I think I'm kind of drawn to that right now for that reason.
It's the that's a big part of it. It's the Doki Doki 2K of the 2K series.
Right. It also came after, and you mentioned this on a prior podcast. It came after 2K18, so obviously there was this like excitement that we got something better with NBA 2K18.
Well, that definitely affects our opinion of games at the time as well. The previous release, how much we were desperately hoping for waiting for that new release and hoping it was better. You definitely do. Any improvement on a troubled release is welcome. So you almost have that nostalgia for that game or that immediate connection with it by default, because you think, oh, finally, you know, I've tried to put up this for a year or maybe just a few months. I didn't play 2K18 until from release to release. I did put it aside and went back to Live 18 that year. But yeah, when you get that new game and it actually lives up to the hype, or surpasses the previous year that was so disappointing, even if that's such a low bar, the fact that the low bar has been cleared is so welcome that you just feel good about the game. And sometimes that does lead to you having an inflated opinion of the game, but I mean, I do like 2K19. I think that was a fairly solid release. And again, yes, 18 does. I do have the nostalgia for it. It's been a while since I've played it regularly. I'm looking forward to it now because there's going to be new versions of Studio 33 and company, new versions of their retro rosters, as we've talked about before, coming out very soon. They're going to be releasing the offline version of that, so no need to worry. We'll still be able to get that even though the 2K share is down. So I will be going back to 2K19, but I do remember it as being a pretty solid game, and having those defensive lapses in the last couple of games, I definitely get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I just want to point out that those 2K19 rosters that are coming out, the retro ones, people keep an eye on those because the amount of work that they're doing on those rosters is unbelievable. I still can't even believe it because I'm part of the Discord, because there's just so many updates that we need to be on the Discord for it. And it's as far as like updating each other and communicating and everything, and just like all the stadium work. They're putting banners in the rafters for like the hockey teams that use those stadiums. They're like, it's little attention to detail stuff like that. They're working on like the jumbotrons and the making the baskets look exactly right. You know, they're working on just all the little details, and it's just, it's probably the most impressive thing I've ever seen.
It's awesome. But you know, beyond that though, I've been looking at something, because I said I've been waiting. I missed downloading it, unfortunately. So I've been waiting for the offline release, but I've been looking at screenshots that people have been posting as they're playing it. Just the simulated stats, and I know there's further work that's gone into the ratings and tendencies since then, but already just the performance, and when you compare it to the real performance and the real stats from that season, those seasons that they're emulating, it's just incredible. There's the amount of attention to detail that has gone into those rosters, you know, and not to beat a dead horse here, but way more than the retro players in the default rosters of 2K.
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, the attention to detail is nuts, and we're still going to be working on things, and I want to update some signatures and all of that stuff. But the attention to detail on tendencies, attributes, making the players and teams play the way they did in real life, also making sure they feel appropriate on the sticks and whatnot, it's just so vital, and they're doing such a good job with that. And it's, you know, and couple that with the art and all that stadium work and court work and jersey work and Dornas and all of that stuff. It's just, it's mind blowing.
And what you have to do, you know, with roster updates. I mean, current, yes, but certainly when you're going to do these big retro projects, just appreciate that level of detail to really go into the trouble of making sure that they play as they did. And the players just aren't just, I mean, anyone can just take a player and give them a cyber face and make sure they've got the right attributes and everything, but to actually make sure they play the way they play and that it's emulating that style, but the teams and the players and the performance and everything, it's just so important. I mean, you know, it's nice to have retro rosters that just do whatever, you know, and to the best of someone's abilities, but when you can go into detail like that, it's just so much more special, and those rosters are, as we've said before, are just amazing.
Yeah, I want to bring up really quick, too, so people get an idea of who's working on these. Stildo 33 kind of heads the project, and then you have Cyberface Making by Calvin Chan. He's just doing an amazing job. So many accurate faces for that roster. And just editing ones that are already in the game, like making Dan Marley look better and whatnot. Then you have Hornets on Fire, who's doing a lot of the ratings and whatnot. Lady Culture, who's also doing stuff like that with ratings and tendencies. And Hornets on Fire is also doing signatures. You have Peaceman Not doing stadium work, jersey work, all of that. Boy, I just don't want to leave anybody else. Sticky Fingers is doing courts and other art-related work, like scoreboards. He's great at scoreboards. He's great at courts, etc. It's just the amount of people. It's not just the amount of people working on the project. It's the passion behind it and how much they care about it. So, yeah, I just wanted to give those guys a shout-out because these are just awesome single-season rosters, and people should definitely get, you know, get their hands on them when they're released.
And before we get too off-topic with the talking about games we've gone back to and changed our minds on, also want to point out that Lady Culture has given us an update on her 2005 roster for 2K11, about 95% done now, so getting closer to release there, and looking forward to that.
There's a lot of good teams in the mid-2000s.
Oh, yeah. I played with a couple of them in 06.
Yeah, exactly. And I was talking with somebody else about this, too. Somebody was talking to me, was mid-2000s basketball really that great? Blah, blah, was it that exciting? And they're talking about the early mid-2000s. And I said, listen, you got to understand that there were teams like the 06-07, like Golden State Warriors, and like those mid-2000s Wizards teams with Gilbert Arenas that were not only really fun in real life to watch, and not only really good overall talent-wise, but they're also great video game teams as well. You know, teams like the 05-06 Nets, who didn't really do much, but they had Jason Kidd, Vince Carter, Richard Jefferson, Kerstich, Cliff Robinson, etc. Like, there's just a lot, like, the league felt a lot deeper. And it felt like there were a lot more, you know, stars in the league, etc. And, you know, you had those great Suns and Spurs teams in the mid-2000s as well, and the Dallas teams that were making the finals and playing against the Heat and everything. It's just a lot of good teams in the mid-2000s.
Well, that's why I'm kind of getting on that nostalgic kick at the moment, and one of the reasons why I stuck around to play that game of 06, and why I'm going to look at playing a few more. Maybe not going back to 07, maybe try some 2K7. I want to go back to those games again, because I was sticking with Live at the time. 2K's the early ISO motion I just couldn't get into, which is why I did stick with Live. And of course, I was running the NBA Live Studio Center at the time. We were still primarily just covering NBA Live, so that's what where my attention was. But I do want to check out those games as well, and see what they're like. I did fire up 2K7 the other day, and this is getting a little off topic, I know, but I was doing some research for an article, and I found myself, Derek, nodding along to the music. And again, I had not played 2K7 that much, so I don't have nostalgia for that game or its soundtrack. But there was just something about that soundtrack at the time that spoke to me much more than the soundtracks of the moment. And I know that's kind of old man thinking, because it's now licensed music, and
It's better. No, it's better. It's better music. I'm sorry. I agree. NBA 2K6, NBA 2K7, NBA 2K8. All had memorable soundtracks.
I think also, if nothing else, the soundtracks kind of fit a sports game, whereas sometimes
they do.
Sometimes there's songs which I don't, and there are. I mean, you look back at 2003's soundtrack, which is the only soundtrack to go platinum, or the first, or the only. I forget which at this time, but that was a great soundtrack. But quite a few of those songs on like 2003's soundtrack, not necessarily what you'd pick for a basketball game, but they still kind of fit and they still worked. There are some songs in recent years where I'm like, well, that's not a bad song or anything, but it just doesn't feel right for a basketball game or a sports game in general.
Right. It seems like they're just throwing out the top artist.
Sure, yeah.
And putting them in the game, and whether the song has absolutely anything to do with basketball or not, or has the right beat in order to get you pumped up or anything, that seems to not matter as much. What I love about 2K6, 2K7, and 2K8 soundtracks is you get in there and it sounds like hoop.
Yes.
I know that sounds ridiculous, but
no, I get it. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. Yeah,
and I do want to point out, too, something about NBA 2K8, because I've done a lot of revisiting of that lately, and I'm playing NBA 2K8, and I'm like, this is a game that's better than I remembered. So that's another game that, you know, I went back and played, and I'm playing this, and I'm like, this game's really fun. Sure, it didn't have right stick dribbling controls. It was still basically the bumper dribbling and whatnot. But as far as like the graphics and the atmosphere, that great crowd camera for the isometric view, which is like only in that game for NBA 2K, which it matches the old NBA Live games from the mid-90s and whatnot, that was like on Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo. But like, I'm playing this game and I'm like, this game just has a lot of good qualities in it, and it's just really enjoyable to play. I think NBA 2K8 is incredibly underrated, and I'd like to say too that I think NBA 2K8 is probably better than NBA 2K10, at least for me.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and play a bit more of both to really make a comparison. But it is interesting that we go back to these games, and maybe you look at the different factors that go into how we receive games at the time and how we perceive them later on. And I touched on it, but a big thing I do believe is the fact that we have the expectations every year. We talked about it a little bit there with 2K18 and 2K19, when expectations aren't met versus when they are. And when you go back to a game, sometimes, when there's no longer those expectations and the pressure of being the latest and greatest game, I mean, look, with Live 06 on 360, if I'm not happy with it, there are some newer games I can move on to, you know? In 2021, I've got some other options that weren't there in 2005 when it came out. So removing that pressure really allows you to look at it with fresh eyes and say, okay, I'm just going to appreciate this for what it is. And I'm still not going to dismiss my criticisms of it. I'm not going to pretend that it's better than it is. But it sometimes does turn out to be better than you remember, better than you thought, because you do have that acceptance of you know what to expect. And sometimes it is a little bit more than what you expect when you take away that pressure and those expectations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that it's a healthy thing to go back and play some of the older games. And I think the reason is because it shows you not only how far we've come in certain areas, but also how many steps we've taken back in others.
Agreed, yeah.
In my opinion. And we've talked about how we've had certain modes, certain content removed over the years. I mean, look at what EA Sports has done with NBA Live. NBA Live 19 is missing so many different qualities that even games like, you know, NBA Live 2002 had.
It doesn't have a playoff mode. Live 95 had one of those.
Right, exactly. I think it's healthy to do that because I think it puts things into perspective, and it's like, hey, there's still so much we can bring either do with the new basketball games or even bring back stuff that we had in some of those old games into the newer titles. But then it also can make you appreciate things like, hey, you know what? Rim, like he's actually grabbing onto the rim now. And hey, you know what? I do like this this enhancement that we may have not been able to get back then graphically. Like I enjoy that. Like, oh, they're actually putting their hands on the ball when they're at the line, as opposed to NBA 2K14 for the PC where the ball is floating in their hands and they're not actually gripping it.
Definitely.
Like you can appreciate stuff like that.
To that point, it kind of branches off into another issue, and I do have an article coming out about this in Monday Tip-Off, cheap plug as always, that goes into a bit more detail about this, but it's relevant to this conversation of going back and looking at something with fresh eyes. The whole thing about how games were once panned, then get held up, and there was a recent tweet about this, and I don't agree with the tweet, and I go into this in the article as well, People saying, oh, this game is terrible, and then 2 years later holding it up as the benchmark. And there are people that do that, and there are people that kind of just hate on the game every year, and the previous game becomes that they like the previous game more by default. So that definitely is a phenomenon, that some people pan games only to hold them up later on. Of course, part of that is going back and seeing that the games weren't as bad as you thought at the time, and getting over knee-jerk reactions is a big part of that. But something I think we need to remember, Derek, is that although sometimes criticism may be loud, and certainly the people who are saying this game sucks, worst game ever, etc., that is always very loud, but that doesn't necessarily mean consensus or the majority opinion. It's often the loud minority of saying, especially a game like 2K17, because that was the game that was mentioned in that example in the tweet, that people saying that game is terrible, but a lot of people, myself included, really liked that game at the time and in retrospect. So it's not really that, it's not the gotcha argument that people really think it is.
The volume of complaints matter. You can't just like pick out a couple of complaints and say, hey, look, these people complained about it, everybody hated it. Like you can't do that. And that's what this is doing. If you go back, and I said this to you before the call, if you go back on Operation Sports and see the feedback that was being given about NBA 2K17, it was really strong. I mean, you can go through pages with only positive comments. about it.
Absolutely, yeah.
You can go on Steam and you can see mostly, you know, just a lot of really good comments about it. And most of the negative ones about 2K17, a lot of them came after the servers were shut down, where people were buying it and then they would go on there, give it a thumbs down and say, man, this game is dead. The servers are down. We can't even play online and all that stuff. So
sorry, so just to interrupt, but to that point, I'm glad that Steam has recent reviews and overall reviews, because that works both ways, that when a game gets ruined by patches or something bad, if they put in microtransactions after release or something, which, I mean, 2K, the microtransactions are there from launch, but I do like that they have recent reviews versus overall reactions on Steam now, because it prevents review bombing in that sense.
Yeah, absolutely, especially with a game like we were just talking about, servers go down.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you can usually tell when a game is being overall more negatively received.
Definitely.
And, you know, things like Metacritic scores matter. You know, 2K17 getting around a 6 on a few hundred user scores, user reviews, and then 2K18 plummeting to like 1.5 or 2, etc. I mean, that means something, right? That's when volume matters. And, you know, you can see the outrage in comments on Twitter, like if, say, Scott O'Gallagher or Chris Manning, or, you know, Ronnie2K or Dazar or Mike Wang, when they tweet something, you can usually see in the comments if people are upset about the game.
Hmm. That's what I don't like it when people try and dismiss that and say, oh, it's just people just focusing on the negative. And to a certain extent, people do have more to say when they're upset than when they're happy. When you're content, you just enjoy the game, right? To a certain extent. But I think it's so myopic, so blatantly shilling in some cases, that to say that this negative reaction is just whining or complaining, and that people are just speaking out because they're upset or they're just jumping on the bandwagon of hating on the game. At this point in time, with 2K especially, and live with the disgust and the disappointment in its last generation, you can't dismiss that criticism. And yes, we can go back and look at knee-jerk reactions in the past, but at the same time, you have to look at everything in context and realize that some of those criticisms in the past were valid, just as they are now. And of course, now we have compounded frustration with certain things, like recurrent revenue mechanics, to name just one persistent issue in basketball gaming these days, predominantly 2K, and realize that this is a trend, that the lower opinions and the lower scores, people aren't happy, and they haven't been happy for a while. It's a sign of problems with the game, not an ungrateful fan base.
Right, exactly. And I do want to point out that people often don't complain just for the hell of it. Like, there's something that's bothering them.
Yeah.
Like, maybe they exaggerate at times, but there's definitely something that's negatively impacting their experience. Nobody wants to turn on a game and say, this sucks. Nobody wants to turn on a game and say, hey, this is really bothering me, or I'm getting more frustration than enjoyment. Like, nobody wants to do that. I also want to point out that, you know, people will go on and say something is positive, or make positive comments. And, you know, look at the thousands of games on Steam that have overwhelmingly positive reviews, or very positive reviews. Those are also human beings going on there, taking the time to give a thumbs up on a game and then writing a review for it or a positive comment for it.
No doubt.
So there are definitely, people will absolutely do that. And you've seen that in the past when, you know, people were, you know, the internet, you know, basically social media wasn't as big, and when NBA 2K11 was out, not as many people were on Twitter and whatnot. But you saw that positive reaction to NBA 2K11. You saw more of the positive comments.
There.
You saw negative comments.
Yeah.
You can go back to
the archives of forums and see those posts, as you said.
Volume matters. I hate blanket statements like, I absolutely hate it. I hate blanket statements where it's like, well, NBA 2K, you all hated NBA 2K17 when it was new,
yeah.
Right? Like, oh, you all hated NBA. No, that's not true. And if you want to use a couple examples with those games, I can use 1,000 examples the other way. So, like, it's just those blanket statements that really bother me. And to use 2K17 is really odd, because I don't think that one was received poorly.
No, in fact, NBA 2K17, there was a vocal complaints about it, depending on which mode you played, I suppose. But that's always the case. But here's the other point, is that people's minds do change when they go back and continue to play a game, or if they're not happy with the current game and go back and realize that the older game wasn't as bad as they thought, or was considerably better than they thought. And that's the thing, if you're holding people to an opinion they held at the time that they may have changed, and have very good reason to change, it's not, they haven't just changed it because, oh, F the new game. They've changed because they've realized the old game is more appealing to them. So it's and again, one of those attempts at a gotcha argument that I forget the actual logical fallacy, the name of the logical fallacy at this time, but basically the idea that you changed your mind about it, therefore it's, you're wrong, or that's a fallacy, or that's that your argument doesn't hold any weight because you changed your mind, so therefore your opinion is invalid, and it's a fallacy, because as new data presents itself, and in this case new data is going back and playing a game again and changing your mind when you feel it's better, you've changed your mind. That's what it comes down to.
That's natural. Christ, I do that with food.
I hate. Yeah, I used to be a very fussy eater. Now I'll eat pretty much anything. So.
No, yeah, I used to hate Brussels sprouts when I was younger, and now I like them.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Like stuff like that happens. You go back and revisit stuff, and sometimes things can get better, sometimes things can get worse, and that's just natural.
But when you were younger, Derek, you hated them. Therefore, you're a hater, you're a hypocrite, just because now you've got a positive opinion of Brussels sprouts 2K21, you know, your opinion of, Brussels sprouts 98.
Remember your top 10 worst foods? Remember that? Mm. Well, I'm going to make you reference that now.
Yeah. Because, you know, what you said when you were 5 definitely matters when you're 36. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
So getting back to games that we changed our minds on, you mentioned 2K16. For me, it's 2K15. That's a game that I wish I spent more time with. For me, it wasn't so much that I disliked it at the time. I kind of gravitated towards Live 15 because I wanted to give Live a chance, and I got more into Ultimate Team that year, so I wasn't really feeling the My Career mode. I'll probably talk a bit more about that 2K15 My Career in an article at some point. But it was mostly that the story and the character, your My Player character, was just a douchebag, quite frankly, and you didn't want to play as him. So I steered away from that. I was kind of burned out on the franchise modes at the time, so there was nothing really to draw me in. But going back and playing that game, I see what I missed as far as the gameplay experience. And of course, My League debuted that year and was quite deep, and as deep as Association had been, even better, with also some of the perks of MyGM, but without the having to pay VC to unlock roster editing and such, roster reordering. So 2K15 is a game that I went back and... That's a kind of a different one for me, because I never thought it was bad as such, but it didn't hook me at the time. But going back, I'm thinking, why didn't this hook me? And that's another example of the changing mind that I've had over the years.
2K15 was great gameplay-wise.
Yeah,
that's such a really, I see it now. That's a really strong game. That's a really strong game from a gameplay standpoint. And I told you, that is by far the most time I've ever spent on my team in an NBA 2K game. I just really enjoyed that mode. I liked the way it was constructed. I liked how challenging it was. I liked how you didn't have the ridiculous challenges that, you know, only took you a minute or two and just felt completely mindless. I felt like that mode was great in that game. But yeah, the gameplay was so strong in NBA 2K15. I think it's probably one of the most underrated games in the series.
Fair.
And I don't think there were a lot of complaints about it at the time. I didn't hear that many. My only small complaint with NBA 2K15 was, other than the lack of being able to mod it, we just didn't have a lot of modding options for that game. It was just kind of like the dark arenas, is they went from the really bright, great atmosphere arenas that were in NBA 2K14, and then with NBA 2K15, they went dark. So that kind of hurt the immersion a little bit. But as far as like from a gameplay perspective, NBA 2K15's gameplay, I would say, is probably overall better than NBA 2K14. And it doesn't get that credit for that jump.
It felt good. The AI was very good as well with the defense, especially the defensive end, just the rotations, something I miss, although perhaps one might argue that not rotating properly on defense is realistic to the current NBA, you know, if we want to take some shots at that. But no, 2K15 across the board just felt good, felt fun, felt realistic. Teammate AI felt really strong. So yeah, no, 2K15 is a game I've gone back and looked at and said, like, this is a game that should have hooked me at the time. And perhaps if I wasn't focusing on Live 15 so much, or if I was more into my league at that time and having not been burned out on the franchise modes a bit and looking for and getting into the my career side of things at that time a bit more, then maybe I would have played it a bit more. And I wish I had. But of course, the great thing about having a collection is that you can pull it out at any time and play a game.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, how many basketball games do we own now? I mean, there's an endless supply, basically.
I need to update my list, but it's I'm sure that it's well in the hundreds for me right now. Especially if you include doubles across various platforms.
Yeah, I need to get NBA Inside Drive 2003 in there and play it. Like, I got it as a present for Christmas, but I still haven't like hooked up the Xbox.
Do you have 2000? So I drive 2000 on PC?
I do, but remember, I couldn't get it to work.
That's right, yeah. So that's one that I've talked about my history with that one, that I went and bought it and just wasn't impressed with it at all. I actually traded it in for GTA 2 at the time. I took it back and traded it in for GTA 2. And I bought it again years later because I thought, look, maybe I was just well into Live 2000 and I couldn't get into a game that was slightly different because I was very much a Live head at the time, and if something deviated too much from the Live format, then it was difficult for me to get into. But I did go back and play that years later, and no, I was pretty right. That one is pretty rough, but as I understand it, Inside Drive 2002 and 2003, some of the best games from that era. But 2000 on PC, it'd be great if you can get it to work, because it's worth checking out. There's even a shot meter in there as far as having a perfect release, so which is a pretty early example of that. But that being said, overall the game is pretty rough. There are no class of 99 rookies. The rosters are outdated. I don't think there's even a creator player in that game. So it's, again, it's almost like that 06 for 360 or Live 14 for PS4 and X1, that it has some decent bones, but it's also incredibly bare bones. So that's one where I went back and realized, no, my initial impressions, even as a 15, 16-year-old, were accurate.
Yeah. I wish I had gotten it, was able to get it to work, but unfortunately, for some reason, it's not working on Windows 10. I got to find a workaround for it. I like going back and playing those games just to see what they were thinking at the time. A lot of times, I just go and put on an older game and just, like, look at the design and look at, like, how the team select screen looks. You know, do they have the real players? You know, how do their faces look in the game?
For sure.
What did they do with the modes and stuff like that? So that's really the reason. It wasn't really to like dive in and really play it at a serious level. It was more I wanted to put it on just to see what it looked like and to see what the developers were, you know, were thinking at the time.
No, absolutely, and you saw my thread on, and later my Wayback Wednesday article on it, Fox Sports NBA Basketball 2000, some of the faces in that game are just incredible.
It's a bad game. The best thing about that game is the scoreboard.
Mm.
Just because it's the Fox Sports scoreboard. You get that type of presentation, but as far as, I'll admit it, you know, just as far as the game overall, it's just not a very good game. So,
but hilariously bad, and finally, I would have been very disappointed with it at the time. But going back years later, and without expectations, without the need for that to be a quality game for me, because if I want a quality game from 2000, I've got NBA Live 2000 from the 2000 season. So, I mean, I had that at the time too, so it was a moot point. But yeah, I can go back today and actually laugh at that game and kind of enjoy. And look, if I'm going to do it for Wayback Wednesday and cover it, I'm going to talk about it as I did in detail and describe what's good, what's bad, and what's bad more than good, as the case may be. But at the same time, I can also talk about and feel it, just from my own personal experiences, just enjoy that something is kind of enjoyably bad.
Oh, yeah. It sometimes it's like the faces in Fox Sports Basketball 2000. the faces are absolutely bad. They're just horrendously bad. And you get a chuckle out of it. I mean, that's still enjoyment, right?
Absolutely.
Something can be, we can look back on it and just say, you know what, this is hilariously bad. But I can still appreciate certain design decisions in those games. Attention to detail on certain presentation elements and, you know, certain things they did with the modes or tried to do with the modes. Like, I'll be honest with you. I think that the 3-point contest in NBA Playgrounds 2 is not very good. I don't think it works that well. It's not that fun. I don't like the mechanics of it, but I appreciate what they did with it. I appreciate that they tried to get a 3-point contest in a Playgrounds game.
Absolutely,
and
yeah.
The fact that they even attempted that design and attempted to put that in there, you know, and the way they made it so it can help you get cards and all of that stuff by accruing points and everything, I appreciate that.
No, I absolutely get where you're coming from. But by the way, the fallacy that I was referring to before is the appeal to hypocrisy fallacy, or two quote, I believe, which is you also claiming an argument is invalid because the opponent fails to act consistently in accordance with its conclusions, or arguing that since the opponent previously held the opposite position, their current position is untrue or untenable, which would go with the idea that somebody said that even if somebody did say that 2K17 was the worst at the time, that the idea that they couldn't change their mind, or that they might find that 2K21 is even worse in comparison. That's the other thing, because games do not always improve over time, as we've talked about many times before.
Yep, exactly. And I think it takes some serious guts in some cases to actually come out and say, hey, you know what? I may have been wrong about this. Or, hey, you know what? I feel different about this game that you guys saw me critique. I was a heavy critique of some of the issues with NBA 2K16, mainly the, you know, players feeling heavy and whatnot. And, you know, I went back and played it. I made those adjustments, and I can say, hey, you know what? My original statement wasn't completely wrong, but hey, you know what? I can make adjustments. Yeah, excuse me. You can make adjustments to this game, and you can make it a lot better, like I did, in my opinion. So,
I mean, if somebody can come to grow to love Brussels sprouts, you know, anything's possible.
Exactly. But yeah, you'll still bring up that, you know, worst top 10 foods, top 10 worst foods list that I made when I was 8.
Yeah, so. Exactly. As though that's still. Still relevant. I'm thinking of some other games that I changed my mind. Live 07, I still think, is a bad game overall. I do feel... and I know we disagree on this. I feel better about it than Live 14, because I felt Live 14 was comparatively worse given the technology at the time, the expectations after the years of layoff, and some of the mechanics of getting stuck in those animations, which is not to say that 07 is... that I now think it's a great game. It's more for me that I always thought 07 for 360 was undisputedly the worst game in the series. Now I'm kind of tossing up between 07 and 14 for me. So my opinion has changed, but not necessarily drastically certainly not drastically to a positive one.
Yeah, I just can't get past the NBA Live 07 animations. Mm. I can't get past the unbelievably silly rocket dunks. The parachute, them running down the court and looking like a parachute's coming out of the back.
Oh, the jersey physics, yeah.
Yeah, their jerseys, yeah. It looks absolutely ridiculous. I can't get over how shooting feels. The frame rate is absolutely terrible. Driving to the hole feels terrible in that game for me. Like, I just don't, I don't see the redeeming qualities in NBA Live 07 that I do in NBA Live 14.
Hmm. If nothing else, whichever order we put them in, I do feel that they're both at the bottom of the barrel.
I can agree with that.
Neither of them are the best examples of what the NBA Live series has brought. They are not Live 10, they are not 06 for either system, for either generation, I should say. They're not 2005, 2000, 2004, 95 even. You know, 95 is a game that holds up pretty well. You can still play that today and have fun with it, if you more so if you played it back in the day, of course. But it's 95 holds up pretty well, and for the time it was such a huge jump as well, whereas 07 and 14 were just tremendous disappointments for their own reasons, in their own way.
Yeah, I think you made a good point, though, that expectations and, you know, what you have for technology at that time and the platform it's coming out on and everything, I think that factors in. because you know what they had for capabilities back when NBA Live 95 was released, and you can appreciate what they did with it.
Definitely. Yeah.
When you get to the point of NBA Live 07 and you're on the Xbox 360 and whatnot, and or the PS3, and you're on that series of consoles, and the tech is supposed to be that much better, and you know what other games are doing with that tech, like NBA 2K6 and whatnot, and that's what they release, and you're like, they could have done so much better, and it kind of magnifies the issues too.
It does. Especially after going back and playing 06 and realizing that maybe that's better than I thought it was, and then seeing it and thinking, wow, they went backwards in gameplay. They added the modes, which they absolutely needed to do, and so that was good. But then they went backwards on the gameplay, and they went in a weird direction with a different style of Freestyle Superstars, level 1, 2, 3, instead of the Star and Superstar levels of prior gen, of 07. Yeah, and you just see that how much of a flop it was as far as that tech. And look, there are some animations, some dunking animations in 06 that are a little exaggerated, that you can jump a little bit from far out, or you've got Rashard Lewis doing a windmill dunk, which on the break, which is not something he really did, but 07's just looks so much more awkward.
It really does. NBA Live 06 definitely has a stronger gameplay base. Like I said, I just wish they had multi-team use in season, and then also
even multi-season play would be nice, and All-Star Weekend, right, exactly. Things that were not
like basic stuff that they'd had in other games.
But it's why I like going back and revisiting these old games and realizing what's better than I thought. Actually, I'll throw one out there. NBA 2K11 for me. When NBA 2K11 came out, I could see its merits, but I was still trying to get into 2K's dribbling system. And of course, 2K13 for me is when dribbling really picked up, because they added the right stick controls. 2K11 is a game that I've been able to go back to and finish the Jordan Challenge and really enjoy, and of course, try to make mods for, because it's a game that I feel much better about now, having gotten used to the 2K style of play, and even being able to adjust for not having right stick dribbling in 2K11. But 2K11 is a game that I've actually felt much better about over the years, as I've grown used to that 2K style, as I said, and been able to look at it without the expectations of, oh, this is different to what I'm used to in Live, it's too hard for me to get into. So, and it sounds weird for me to say that, because 2K11 is, and it's still considered such a fantastic game, and for great reason, for good reason. But that was another one that I've changed my mind on, because I had to get used to that 2K style and go back and give it a second chance. When I didn't have that, oh, this is different, I can't handle this, I have to put it aside. I can see that it's great, but I just can't get into it. So that's another situation where you have to get used to it, I think.
Yeah, NBA 2K11, obviously, is very easy to pick up and play. I also think that my brothers, even more than me, just spent so much time with that game, and it's such a fond, they have just so many fond memories of playing that game. That was a big deal for us when it came out. And so throughout that game cycle, it was a big deal for us. So there isn't anything like where I would go back and even say that it was better than I remember, because it was great when I first put my hands on it. I think that's just a really strong game in the series. Some would say the strongest.
It holds up well. As far as that overall quality, attention to detail, it definitely does. So with that being said, we've covered a lot of the reasons of why our opinions change, and some of the holding changing opinions against people, which is, again, it's silly. It is quite literally a fallacy, appeal to hypocrisy. Are there any other games that you've changed your mind on, for better or worse, after going back years later?
Boy. Let me think for a second here.
But while you're having a think, I'll throw out NBA Live 99 as one, because I played more of 2000 before Live 99, and having gone back and played Live 99 PC, which did receive a patch and the actual roster updates for the lockout season, it's not far behind 2000. I mean, it doesn't have the depth of the franchise mode that was introduced in 2000, and there is some, it's not quite as good graphically, and some of the gameplay is definitely improved in 2000. But 99 is not that far behind. Not as far as I originally thought.
and Antoine Walker, the cover athlete.
Absolutely, yeah. Shimmying all over the place.
NBA Live 99 is a good game, in my opinion, overall. That wasn't a bad game in the series. It was a good follow-up to NBA Live 98, in my opinion. There are two games that – one's going to surprise you. There were two games that I went back recently and was playing. One, Double Dribble Playoff Edition, is a little bit better than I remembered. It's actually kind of an enjoyable game. It's very strange shooting the ball in that game, but just like the soundtrack and the the fake Horace Grant in there, who looks like Horace Grant but isn't, and wearing the goggles and whatnot. I did go back and play that, and it's a little bit better than I remembered. And I was finding myself actually enjoying playing that game. The other one was actually one that I put on tonight. And we talked about this as one of the worst basketball games, if you can even call it that, of all time. But my brother and I were talking about it after I put it on. And we remembered how many hours we spent on this when we were kids. Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball.
Wow.
Actually,
yeah.
we had a lot of fond memories about getting power-ups and the challenging, actually going through like the season mode in that game. And I was playing it, and we were both like, "Yeah, we actually had a lot of good memories with this game."
Well, and again, when it's just not
that bad when you see it. How do I say it? When you don't try to take it seriously as a basketball title, and you work with the mechanics the game gives you, it almost can pass for fun. I'm gonna say that game. It also has a great soundtrack. Bill Laimbeer's Combat Basketball. I really enjoy the soundtrack, the music that plays while you're on the court and whatnot. So, yeah, I don't know. I can't believe I said that, but I would say that game is, yeah.
I think it is possible to enjoy a game that you know is technically flawed at best. I mean, look at me and the game, the NES game that I always bring up in jest, but that, Marvel vs. Space Mutants, of course, that is not a good platformer. It is not Mario. It is not even Zelda 2. But there is something about it that's appealing. There's a nostalgia there. If you put aside all the clunky mechanics, I enjoy it for what it is. And absolutely, we could mention a lot of games. Even some games maybe in the NBA Live series and other big releases that we do enjoy despite the problems that they have. Not every game is, sadly, really well polished. So no, I totally get that. With that game, are you playing that two-player or against the CPU? Because that also changed things up as well.
Well, there I was just playing against the CPU. The CPU. Back at the time, we also played it against the CPU. But I did want to bring this up before I lose this thought. A game that is just as good as I remember, and it's not basketball-related, was Sewer Shark. I beat it again. I think it was a week or two ago. I went in there and I beat the game again. I went through the entire game. I died a lot, but I ended up beating it. That game is just still so fun. And like, I love going back and playing a game that this is another aspect of it that's old technology that we played a long time ago. Sometimes 20 or 30 years ago, you go back and play a game and you're like, man, this game still has it. Like, this game is still so good. And, man, the soundtrack is so good.
Yeah, games back in the day couldn't rely on a gimmick of great graphics. I mean, they were good for the time, obviously, but these days, I don't know, I feel that there's sometimes less creativity. And the creativity sometimes made up for the lack of polish or lack of quality. I mean, there was something about it that was just challenging, or it just drew you in, even though it wasn't necessarily the pinnacle of design. But yet it just worked.
Parappa the Rapper. Like, I went back and played that too recently. And that was a game we loved when I was growing up. And I put in Parappa the Rapper and I'm playing it. And I'm like, this game still has it. This game still has that same appeal. It's still fun. It's still interesting. The characters are still interesting. The challenge is still there and all of that stuff. I just love that. I love going back and playing a game, and like 20, 30-year-old games sometimes. You go back and play them, and you're like, man, this is still a really fun game.
Well, you look at a lot of the indie games these days, follow those concepts, or even that art style. Maybe it's a bit more polished than it was back in the day because of superior... You can do a superior version of 16-bit graphics, if that makes sense, or that 16-bit style, that's sprite style. But a lot of the indie games these days harken back to that golden age or that early age of gaming. So you can see why the concepts hold up.
No, absolutely. And I've gotten quite a few of those indie games recently on Steam, and I'm searching for them constantly just to find the next really good side scroller.
Have you played Limbo?
Yes. That I actually had for the console a while back, and they're also the same people who made the game Inside, which is also on Steam. Yeah, those games are unbelievable. The art is ridiculous. They're eerie.
The puzzle design,
concepts. Yeah, they're just amazing. Super underrated, and that's why there's those games can get millions of downloads at times, and make these people a lot of money because there's still a market for those types of games.
I mean, you look at the mobile space, a game like Flappy Bird, how much that game made its creator. Ridiculous.
Yeah, that creator is rich.
Yeah.
Based on that simple concept.
Exactly. So one game I want to finish up on, because it's one of those divisive games in history, it's one of those games I feel people are very positive towards if it was one of their first games, and if it was somebody's kind of fifth or sixth sim game, the fifth or sixth year of playing the annual NBA Live games, they've got a lower opinion of it because it did lean in a very arcade direction, and that's NBA Live 2003. That's a game that I continue to have mixed feelings about that game when I go back to it today, because I can see the good in it, but I can also remember and still feel that it disappointed me on the sim front. Before I get into it, how do you feel about Live 2003 today? Do you have similar mixed feelings, or do you lean more positive or negative?
I like it. More positive. In fact, I go back and play NBA Live 2003, and I realized why we loved it. And I can't for certain say that NBA Live 2004 is better. In fact, I think I told you recently that we were going back and playing those when my brother and I put together our Legends teams again, and we were playing against the computer and all of that stuff. And I got to say, NBA Live 2003 almost felt more free-flowing as far as the action went. And we found ourselves enjoying NBA Live 2003 even a little bit more. So I will say that I think Live 2003 is one of the strongest releases, and it was such a big jump over Live 2002. Like,
it is definitely more free-flowing, yeah, than 2002. Yeah. The funny thing about 2002, I go back and play that, just for a quick about 2002. To really enjoy that, you have to go against basketball strategy. For example, if you want to get defensive rebounds in 2002, don't jump. Just get them off the floor, basically. Yep. You have to, if you do, because I always thought I always got a problem with defensive rebounds, which it is a problem, but I realized you can actually get a proper ratio of defensive to offensive rebounds if you don't jump, because the player who jumps is at a disadvantage. So it's crazy.
Yeah, see, stuff like that, and when you play a game like NBA Live 2003, you just feel like you're more playing basketball, and like you have more control. And then obviously you have the right stick dribbling and whatnot, and the rebounding makes more sense. And driving to the hoop makes a lot more sense, and it looks better and whatnot. So, yeah, I agree with that. I think that Live 2003 holds up just as well as Live 2004. At bare minimum. I just think it's a really good game.
That's fair. I prefer 2004 because I think it did a better job toning down the arcade elements and being more of a sim game. The fact that it introduced sliders also helped. 2003, to me, tonally doesn't feel what I wanted it to be as far as a sim game. But that being said, it is definitely possible to enjoy that game. The right stick dribbling, it's always going to be a significant release because of the introduction of freestyle control, no question. But I do have mixed feelings because I can enjoy it, but at the same time, I also remember and still feel the disappointment of this is a bit too arcade for what I would like NBA Live to be. So I always have mixed feelings on that.
I think it's how you play. I think it's how you play. Like, we never played, when we were playing Live 2003, we were never playing super serious with it.
Yeah. And see, that's, I wanted we to. Did a, and that's.
Yeah, my yeah. brother and I, we finished like an entire season on the same team. We did play it on the hardest level, but we played on the same team, and we used Legends against regular teams, and that's how we played it.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah, and, like you said before, it does come down to how you play.
Right. And then when we did play, as far as like if it was, you know, me and my brothers and whatnot, we did a fantasy draft and we turned injuries off. And we'd go into the season, we'd just have fun games against each other. Like stuff like that. So it depends on how you play it and how you want to look at it. Now, would I have enjoyed the game as much if I was saying, hey, you know what? I'm going to play a season and I want to do a realistic season and I want the stats to come out realistic when I play. And I want to have real transactions and all of that stuff. Like if I was looking at it that way, I may look at, you know, and trying to play it that way, I may look at Live 2003 quite a bit different.
That's my hang up. But the courts, you know, the courtside comedy cutscenes, which they're also a divisive artistic choice as well, and that's a hint at a future Friday Five article as well. But I didn't think they were the fit. I'm glad they got rid of them, but at the same time, they also are pretty funny for what they are. And I will never, Derek, never not enjoy the site. And I've got the clip of it on our YouTube channel, NBA Live Series Center on YouTube. You can go and check it out. But the clip of Kwame Brown chewing out Michael Jordan during a timeout is just the fact that it's because it's generated that the center always does it to the small forward. So it just looks ridiculous. It's so funny to see time.
It's the exact opposite of what really happened.
Exactly, yeah. So with that being said, let us know in the comments or on social media or indeed in the forum some games that you changed your mind on and what caused you to change your mind. It's one of those things, Derek, that is, as we said, absolutely worth going back to old games to see how they hold up. It gives you perspective on the newer games, gives you ideas of features that they could bring back, shows you how far they've come, how far they could go, how far they've regressed. Keeping things in perspective and knowing the history of basketball games, if you are interested in basketball games as we are, it's just so important, and it's so rewarding when you can go back and dust off a game that, certainly when you can dust off an old favorite, but when you can dust off a game that you didn't really like that much, but then you realize, oh, this is actually pretty good, and have a fun session with it. You know, that's some people aren't into retro gaming, and that's cool. I understand that. You just want to play the latest game. But if you do have nostalgia, if you do like going back and playing the old NBA games, as I've said so many times before, they do act as interactive almanacs because of the way they capture the season at the time. But if you can go back and dust off a game like 06 or 2000 or an old 2K or any game in general in basketball gaming, if you can dust off an old title and find out it's a bit better than before, it's like finding buried treasure. And I know that's a bit of a cliche thing to say, but it's really cool. And I really enjoyed going back and finding that 06 for 360 was, you know, just a little bit better than I thought.
Yeah, it's important to note also that not everybody, in fact, very few people are as obsessed with basketball video games as Andrew and I.
That is true. We are. That's why we're doing a podcast about it. It's why we do all the content. But you know, people do seem to enjoy it, and we're very grateful for that. And to that point, Derek, we now open up the mailbag. We only have one question this week, but it is a good one. But we do love doing the mailbag, so we do encourage people to get on that. Put the call out a little bit late this week, I know, but if you do want to get involved, podcast at nba-live.com, or you can get in touch with us on Twitter at the NLSC. Our Facebook is actually kind of, I'm trying to fix that up because of the new laws in Australia, the media bargaining law at the moment. The Facebook page isn't really working, but you can usually get in touch with us via social media, or podcast nba-live.com, or in the forum. But we do love the mailbag, Derek.
Yeah, no, this is one of my favorite parts of the show, if not my favorite part, just for the fact that, you know, you guys are listening and, you know, you're asking questions and you're interested in the show and you're interested in basketball gaming, and we love to hear from you. So, yeah, I definitely love this segment.
And to that point, this week's question comes once again from Plump Papa Koala. Thank you, as always, for tuning in and listening to the show and sending in the mailbag question. And Plump Papa Koala says, I know it's still bad, but as far as a realistic compromise is concerned, if it takes about €80 worth of VC or so to fully max out a My Player, have that VC spread to all your builds so that if you want to try a new build, you don't need to grind another 50 hours or spend all that money again. Still need to get all the badges, but there's no reason you can't have the shared spending on attributes. So basically, the suggestion would be that for a one-time extra fee of X amount of VC to upgrade a player, that you'd be able to use that on multiple players. You still have to grind for badges and which are your additional boosts, as we've talked about before, but you'd be able to respec and spend that VC on multiple players. You know, this is, I'd love to see it, Derek, but I just don't see 2K being that kind, unfortunately. But I do like the idea, but it's just so tough to see 2K showing that much goodwill especially when this is such a big moneymaker for them.
You have to realize that if it impacts the bottom line at all, as far as a negative impact, that the chances of 2K considering it are slim to none, as long as they feel like their overall sales are not being hurt. So it is a great idea, but basically what you're saying is, you know, stop making us spend as much, which is something that you should be, you know, saying, you know, you should be frustrated about, and it's something that you should speak your mind about. But at the end of the day, that is, they're not in the business, to be completely honest with you, they're not in the business to hurt their own bottom line without the, you know, their overall sales being hurt. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Literally, it would have to be a huge, you know, maybe a petition that's signed and a giant outcry, a large mass of people, and I mean like thousands upon thousands, maybe even millions of people, really making a stink about this, and or an influencer that has, you know, millions upon millions of followers, or a celebrity or something like that, putting out a video or a statement or something like that saying this is BS that they're doing this, and then that causes the uproar and all the other people to be complaining about it and stuff like that. Like, it would take so much for them to implement a change like that that's fair to the gamer, and something, you know, something that would hurt their bottom line. That's just the truth. That's just business, and that's what they would do. I'm not saying it's right, but that's
of course, yeah. I mean, we have to look at the reality of the situation, which is what Papa here is looking to do. You know, he's not suggesting that you know that we don't grind badges or that you get it for free, because that's simply not going to happen. I think it would take the bubble bursting on microtransactions. It would take people deciding collectively, as a user base, we are done with VC. And unfortunately, the whales are always going to give them that money. There are people who are just going to say, look, I've got income to burn, I've got money to burn, I don't mind spending $5,000 a year. Not me. I'm not spending $5,000 a year on a game for my team packs or to upgrade multiple my players. But there are definitely people that will, and they are never going to join in a boycott. But so it would really take the bubble bursting. It would take legislation blocking it in more countries that 2K comes out in. They've already done that, I believe. I believe Belgium was the one that banned it, and 2K quite laughably tried to get Belgian gamers to campaign against this legislation. And of course, you're basically saying, I mean, that was just a terrible argument. The game is like, we're actually on the government side on this one. We don't like the microtransactions, you know. Go take a flying leap. If you look at what's feasible, because this is a scenario that Papa has put out there, that obviously that it's going to take, it's going to be expensive if they do it, and there's going to be some conditions to it. If they did, I don't know, a one-time pack where you could upgrade, we could create, say, three my players, three different builds, and upgrade them, or if you got cents on the dollar, essentially cents on the dollar respecking, you got the VC back but not the full amount, or if you could carry badge progress over to another respec and carry the badge progress over but have to spend the VC again, that's probably more realistic. But you know, if they actually did put a pack out there, Derek, say $50-$60, and that you could say it will give you enough VC that you can make and max out or get close to maxing out three players, I would actually consider that. I would consider it if I wanted to make the build.
It's still BS, though.
It is. It actually is.
It's still absolutely BS. It's still spending almost the amount that you spend or more game again.
But if you look at how much VC that you have to get, how much VC you have to use to actually get to 99 overall, the amount of grinding and to work out to how much it actually costs, it actually costs about $150. It's equivalent to the pack of $150 worth of VC, which is about 450,000 VC, $150 Australian dollars, which is just ridiculous. That's twice as much as the game costs to max out one player.
Can I bring something up there?
Sure.
So they have this thing on Final Fantasy XI now, which is for the PC, where you can buy your way to level 80. Like, you can buy a character for a level 80. what the hell is the point of playing?
Well, that's the thing. That is the problem with the micro design. Yeah.
What's the point? Yeah. So what's the point of, what's the challenge? You know, what's the point of playing? What's the point? You know, what's the, you know, the benefit of progression and all of this stuff, like the reward of progression, all of this, like what, I absolutely hate it. I absolutely hate the idea of saying, hey, I can buy my way to 99. I can buy my way to 95. You didn't earn that. And you know what? The game, the people who make the game, you know, if it was in the best interest of the gamer, would find a proper balance where you, you know, first off, I don't think virtual currency shouldn't be in there anyway, in my opinion. But, for you sure. know, they would find the proper balance of, you know, risk and reward and whatnot. And, you know, you'd have to earn your way to that higher overall. But, you know, without all of the absolutely unnecessary grind and, you know, the gambling mechanics in the game and whatnot. I absolutely hate this whole idea that people feel like they have to buy their way to reach a status, to enjoy the game and to reach a certain status and everything, as opposed to earning it. And you can say that's old school mentality or whatnot. I just think that it's right.
Well, it stands to reason. it stands to reason, yeah. And Jim Sterling has brought this up in their videos before, is that if you can pay to skip the grind, and to that point, it was such a great point that the Jim made that I brought it up in some of my articles as well, because I think it's a point that absolutely needs to be stressed, and you've just brought it up there and, you know, and stated it very, you know, very clearly. If you have to, or if you can buy your way to success like that, or a higher level, it doesn't say much for the experience to get there. It doesn't say that it's worth playing. And that is the problem with game design when it does revolve around recurrent revenue mechanics like that, that if you can buy a shortcut, then that means the shortcut is preferable, which means the experience is not, which goes against the idea of playing a game for enjoyment. So I absolutely get that. It's more a case of, I think, necessity, because it's not going anywhere. If they did offer some kind of pack once a year that you could get this and it would be good for, say, 3 my players. Unlimited my players, I don't think that's ever going to be realistic. But let's see what could be realistic. If they did offer a one-time pack every year that you could buy, or maybe you can buy it multiple times, but one pack gets you enough VC that you can level up 3 players and not have to spend. I think that's more realistic, probably still unlikely, but that is something I might consider if I wanted to make multiple my players. If you go to my team as a similar example, and this is the funny thing, is why they're trying to obviously get people to spend, and the whales will. Whales will just dump money, thousands of dollars, on packs that have terrible odds. If you gave me packs with good odds, or if you gave me a situation where you said, okay, Andrew, if you spend $20, you will get guaranteed every Jordan that we release this year, every Jordan card. You know what? For a guaranteed, I mean, I wouldn't be happy about it, and of course there are still the problems of the fact that it doesn't carry over from year to year, but if I had guaranteed content that I knew I would get, kind of like any other DLC or expansion pack for Fallout, for example, if I was guaranteed that, I would consider paying $20 to get guaranteed Michael Jordan cards. And the best, if they said, you pay $20, you'll get all the Jordan cards, all the best ones. When they bring up the Galaxy Opal, you'll get that too. I'd consider paying that, and I'm surprised that they don't do it. But you know what? If they say you can dump $20 for this much VC to possibly get a Jordan pack, possibly pull Jordan in a pack, but you're probably most likely going to get a bronze player in each and every one of these packs, I'm not spending that money. So it's such a low yield that you get for your money that I'm surprised that they haven't found ways, or that it hasn't occurred to them to get people to have that guaranteed prize. Because I think people who wouldn't normally spend the money probably might consider it if it was guaranteed, but for a chance and for an unfair... You know, I think it's funny, in their greed, they're actually... And I always hesitate to put it out there because it's almost giving them ideas to be more greedy, to be greedier. But if they... It almost seems like their greed is actually holding them back from making more profits because it's such an unfair system.
I don't know. It's not about the short game. It's about the long game. Yeah. I can't say I agree. And the reason is because if they do that and you do that $20, let's say, $20 or $30 at the start, that negates those people who are going to spend, you know, impulsively $10 to $15, or, you know, or they get impatient and they spend those $10 to $15 a month.
True.
Or 50,
but you also get those, you also get those people who would never spend, might consider it.
Possibly, yes. I agree with you. Yeah, that is very possible as well. But I think that what they're thinking is they're in it for the long game. They're in it for the year round earnings. And if they have a person that's going to be spending $10 to $20 a month, which, you know, they spend a lot more often over the course of time, as opposed to having a one-time $20 fee, then yeah. Yeah, they're gonna go with the long game so they can make more money,
which is what it comes down to. And unfortunately, yeah.
My biggest problem though is that the grinding mechanics are there intentionally. All the grinding and the way that they do it is preying on consumers, and that's why I hate the whole thing. Well, you don't have to buy. Well, they're basically putting mechanics in the game, in order to pressure you to buy your way into progress in order to enjoy
if you don't, you have to grind hard, and you have to do that every year, and the progress doesn't carry over. You've got to grind hard just to have fun, just to be competitive with people who are paying. So I agree. The people that say that it's optional, I think is a very myopic point of view, because it's optional, but the downside of not choosing that option is a lesser experience.
Yeah, possibly months of a lesser experience too. Like, you're talking about, you know, how many hours do these people have, right? What if these people have school and work, you know, how many hours do they have to spend into the game? So if they don't have that many hours to spend, you know, upgrading their player, it could take them months to get them to an overall where they're actually starting to enjoy the game. So how many people want to wait those months? And how many times in the game is all of this stuff being thrown in your face too?
Absolutely,
advertising,
yeah.
You know, mechanics and all.
To put a number on it, I mentioned that I had spent 854 hours in 2K20 to get a player to 99 overall and another player to 90 overall. So that's how much grinding there is to get
that. Think about that. And how many people are going to spend that type of time in the games?
Yeah.
Absolutely. No, hardly any. But guess what? They're going to want to be able to go online every now and then and play a fun game. But what do you have to do to play that fun game? Right.
Yeah.
So like that's how they get people. And the amount of, I can't even imagine the amount of money they make off of this. Like, I wish I had like a figure.
And the problem with it is that the My Team servers, as they just progressed to a new season in My Team just this in the past 24 hours, and the servers were down about an hour or two into the new season tipping off in My Team into 2K21 next gen. Not sure if it was current gen as well. At the time, I tried to get on, and I noticed it was down, and then I saw Shake and Bake and a couple of others talking about it. And then you've got Ronnie on Twitter talking about how they've finally patched it so that Amethyst players don't shake, and that Amethyst players aren't treated as top tier, and he's acting like this is this great improvement while the servers have been horrible. And I know Ronnie Fix Your Servers has become a meme at this point. But the big problem is, and we've talked about it before, is that all this money that they're making, and it's not just unfair to the consumer, and we're not getting the fair things that the compromise that Popper is talking about here in the suggestion. Not only that, but the money isn't even going back into the game to bolster the servers or improve the experience. It's going into the pockets of the suits. So it's benefit. So all these people that are defending microtransactions, we do not benefit at all from this, at all. They could still make a game and have it come out and be a good game without microtransactions. But in fact, designing a game around microtransactions actually ensures a weaker game design because of the grinding. So they do not... I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear that it's optional. I don't want to hear that it's not ruining the game. And because even if you don't buy VC, it is still affecting the overall experience and quality of the game.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of examples I could use outside of video games that say that the whole statement of you're not forced to do it is just complete BS. That pressure is there for a reason. That grind is there for a reason. And the constant advertising of it in the game is in there for a reason. And you talked about this recently. You talked about how they said that they weren't going to be more lenient on microtransactions, and how their My Team revenue how much money they make in that mode was of vital importance. Remember?
Yeah.
And you had said that, you know, they were shooting for a goal with that. Well, people, I want to remind you that my team, the mode, comes with the game, and that game that you that it comes with is a game that you already paid either $60, $70, or $100 for to start off. But they have a whole separate bracket to milk you for more money based on that one my team mode, and they have a lofty goal for that. So I don't want to hear it. You know, that the mechanics around my team, the mechanics around those online modes are there for, you know, the gambling mechanics, the advertising of it, the grind, all that stuff. That is there in order to pressure you and even make you, in some cases, spend extra money. And you know what? It works.
That's the sad truth of it. That's the sad truth.
And then people stand up for it, and that's even sadder.
I was going to say that any content creator, influencer who stands with the company over their fellow gamers is not someone who should be speaking for us. Shame on them. I will always say that. And I know that it's giving up perks and access and everything, but this is a time to stand with your fellow gamer. This is a time to be advocating for solutions like the one that Papa put out there. Now, do I think that's likely? No, unfortunately not. But these are the compromises that we should be at least put out there to the company and say, look, this is what we're sick of. We want value for money. We want an experience. Stand up for it. Don't be throwing people under the bus. Don't be calling people whiners because they have very legitimate complaints about a very shady practice. So to that point, you know, stand with your fellow gamers over this. And yes, and Papa, while I do think that is a fine idea, and I think that there is a way that it could certainly be adapted, I mean, there's a lot of goodwill that 2K should be doing, but they're not. And unfortunately, I think this is going to be another situation where that is the case.
No, I don't think so either. I think that, like I said, a huge uproar would have to happen in relation to this topic. And, you know, people would have to be writing about it. Influencers or even celebrities would have to be, you know, people with a big following would have to be making noise about it. And then in turn, you know, the population gets mad about it and all that stuff, and they have to see damage to their bottom line based on this approach in order to do anything. And unfortunately, they don't see damage done to their bottom line because there's, you know, unfortunately no competitor for NBA 2K in the basketball gaming space. So yeah, I think that they're just going to continue on what they're doing. If anything, it might get worse before it gets better, and that's just my opinion.
Unfortunately, but that being said, I do love the suggestion.
I do too. I think it's a great idea. And I think that you should voice that, you know, those ideas and hope that the right ears take it in. And so, yeah, definitely great question. And, you know, I guess keep speaking up.
Yeah, and thank you for sending that in. It's always great to hear from our listeners about that and talk about these things. But, yeah, keep putting those suggestions out there. I mean, there's it won't harm anything. There's nothing to lose by putting it out there. But as far as what can be gained, well, it does come down to that bottom line. The bottom line is their bottom line, Derek.
Yep, 100%.
So with that being said, that has brought us to the end of episode number 363 of the NLC podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. The show comes out every Sunday, of course, on the NLSC, which is nba-live.com. We're also on all the major podcatching apps and platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Podcast Addict. If you prefer to listen to us on those platforms, search for the NLC podcast, look for our logo, and that will be us. Please subscribe. Please leave us a hopefully positive review on the Apple Podcasts platform as well, or keep streaming on the NLC. As long as you're tuning in each and every week and enjoying the show, that is the main thing. And since we're at the end of the show, Derek, let's plug things and get out of here, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are recording a episode of Holding Court with D for Three, episode 14, this weekend. Fingers crossed for that, as long as everything goes as scheduled. Also find me on Twitter at D4384, on the NLSC D4Three, on YouTube D4Three, and then on IG D4Three as well.
You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at AndrewNLSC, and of course, Andrew in the forum. The NLSC is on Facebook and Twitter at the NLSC. As I mentioned, currently having some issues with our Facebook page thanks to the proposed legislation in Australia. Still trying to sort that out, but you can still like and follow us there, I believe. Certainly on Twitter at the NLSC. We're also on Instagram, NLSC Basketball. YouTube is NBA Live Series Center. And of course, keep it locked to the NLSC itself, nba-live.com, for everything we do for basketball video games. But yes, that's all for this week, so thank you once again for tuning in. Until next time, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Derek.
Go get buckets, everyone.